Welcome everyone, and thank you for joining today's webinar on how to successfully attract, retain, and develop your multi-generational workforce. My name is Chase, and I will be moderating today's session. I'd like to introduce Spencer Reynolds. Spencer has been running and training small businesses for the past 20 years. He spent the past 10 years training small business owners on how to put systems and processes in place to generate predictable results. Spencer was formerly VP of HR and training at Genesis Brand Solutions and is currently leadership coach at Pinnacle Influence. Welcome, Spencer, and thank you for taking the time to join us. In addition to Spencer, I would like to introduce Wes Burke, who is the Director of Human Resources here at Alchemy. Wes brings a strong retail background with experience in talent management, employee engagement, and leadership development. Prior to joining the Alchemy team, Wes worked for Target Corporation, supporting 12,000 team members. So again, welcome, Spencer and Wes. With that, I will turn it over to Spencer and Wes with one last plug. Utilize Twitter to join the conversation as well as the GoToWebinar chat functionality. With that, I believe Wes will be kicking things off.
Awesome. Thanks, Chase. I appreciate the introduction and very excited to spend time with Spencer today talking to you all about how to attract, retain, and develop in today's workforce. I'll quickly cover the agenda with you. The first portion of this, I'm going to spend some time talking about today's makeup of our workforce. We're going to dive a little bit further in and talk about Generation Y, otherwise known as Millennials, and their current impact on the workforce. And then I'm going to turn it over to Spencer, and Spencer is going to deep dive into proven strategies that he's used in the past. That he's seen quite a bit of success and that really go across all generations and how you're able to, again, attract, retain, and develop your workforce. As we jump into the first section, I wanted to spend a little bit of time, we talked about the workforce, defining what that breakout, what that makeup looks like today. So when we talk about a multi-generational workforce, there are really three or four subsects that we talk about, but three of those that have the biggest impact today based off of the current makeup. A lot of times we hear about these different generations and different characteristics and how they impact each other, but I don't know that we often take a lot of time to define that. So I want to take a second today and just give you what we found in our research to define what the generations and how they play out. So millennials, and there are two types of millennials, trailing millennials and leading millennials, typically are born around 1983. Again, that year can vary depending on what piece of research you look at. After that, you see the Generation X group, and that's typically 32 to 48 years old, born 1966 to 1982. And then baby boomers, which are born 1965 to 1947, typically 49 to 67 years of age. And then the last generation of our workforce are matures, otherwise known as traditionalists, that are typically born prior to 1946. Now, the one generation that's not listed up here, and we're more and more seeing impact very quickly on our workforce, is Generation Z. These were typically born in this new generation was born typically in the mid-90s to about 2010. And again, we'll be entering the workforce in the next couple of years. So let's take a second and figure out which generation our viewers fall into today. So on your screen, you'll see a quick poll. If you don't mind just taking over the next 20 to 30 seconds and answer your poll, and then we'll share back the results with everybody. Wow, I don't know if I could have planned this any better. If we go and look at the next slide, or so for the breakdown, as an FYI, we have 27% of our group today are millennials, 36% Generation X, 36% baby boomers, and 3% traditionalists are mature. Again, couldn't plan that any better, especially as we look at the next slide here. But one third of our workforce today is made up of millennials. So I think it's pretty remarkable that that's what our webinar. I don't know, Spencer, if you had some plans out there that helped us achieve that number or not.
Sure did.
When we talk about our generational workforce, so again, we talked about total population. Actually, in the workforce, it's about 53.5 million that are millennials, about 52.7 million that are Generation X, and about 44.6 million That works out to be one-third of our workforce are millennials, and they happen to be the generations that are changing the workforce more rapidly than any generation prior to that. In terms of the way we operate, we think, we collaborate, we'll spend a little bit more time talking about that in a second. 54% of Generation Xers, by the way, could be approaching retirement pretty quickly within the next 10 to 12 years. And by the way, when polled, most of them said that they plan to continue to working after retirement. 75% of baby boomers say that the 2007 to 2009 recession is the main cause of delaying retirement. In fact, most plan to stay in the workforce several years after retirement age. So when we look at these three generations in particular, and we talk about what motivates employees, there's a few commonalities, and I think often we spend a lot of our time talking about the differences, and we don't always talk about what brings them together. The three things that we know about each workforce are pretty consistent. Number one, above all, they want learning opportunities. They want to continue to grow their professional development. They're all driven, even though their goals might be slightly different. They definitely have goals and things that they want to achieve. And lastly, they want the most productive way to get things done. When we look at the three and divide them out a little bit further, it's interesting to see that millennials are very much influenced by social media, technology in the workforce. When surveyed, a majority of millennials specifically want mentorships within their workplace. Generation Xers tend to be the most creative out of the three generations. They also are the most adverse to technology, strangely enough, between the millennials and the baby boomers. And then baby boomers enjoy team building. They spend a lot of time at work, and I'll talk to you a little bit about work-life balance in a second, but they also enjoy mentoring others, which is a nice correlation we think about the fact that millennials want to be mentored. I think another interesting fact as we look at these three generations is how they look at work-life balance. Baby boomers typically live to work. Generation Xers are the first one who probably started that term work-life balance. And when we talk about Generation Xers, they really look for a clear definition between work and life. Millennials, on the other hand, have switched or transitioned to a work-life integration. How do I do work and life at the same time in a way that's easy for me? So what does this mean for our generation? What does this mean for our employers today? Well, first of all, we've got to have a strategy to attract new talent. Again, one-third of millennials make up our workforce today. When we talk about that too, the impact, an average job tenure for a millennial is about 3 years. Well, I myself am falling in that millennial category, and I actually spent 6 years at my last company, but when Spencer and I were doing the preparation, I think Spencer's question was, how many jobs did you have during that time? And to be quite honest with you, I switched jobs every 18 months and 24 months within the 6 years that I was there, holding three different positions over the course of 6 years. So how do we create opportunities within our company that allow millennials to get a lot of variety within the workforce and continue to develop and grow? Lastly, when surveyed, 64% of millennials said they'd rather make $40,000 at a job they love than $100,000 at a job they think is boring. So what does that mean for us? When we talk about this, the conversation's got to be really focused, and we've got to understand what attracts people to the company. Millennials tend to be more corporately socially responsible and focused on community and sustainability than any other generation before. In fact, when we look at some of the characteristics of millennials, they tend to be optimistic, civic duty oriented, very confident, sometimes overconfident, you might say. There's a very large respect for diversity. They tend to be informal, which this has really challenged the way that we operate, especially in hierarchical companies. They're used to a flat environment and want access. They can be very persistent, determined, and sometimes that can be viewed as disrespectful. They're very socially aware and very team-oriented. Millennials in the workplace, they want options and choices. They expect attention and feedback. They want to multitask using social media. They're very impatient. They want to be led. And they desire a lot of positive reinforcement. I think the last one's really important because it's not always about monetary rewards. It's about the recognition that you receive for doing a job well done. Recently, the Center for Research and Public Policy completed a survey that was commissioned by Alchemy, specifically looking at the food industry and the impact of various things within our workforce. One of the questions when surveyed across leadership in the food industry was, what are we making changes to accommodate new employees' growth and the way they learn? Surprisingly, 32.9% said that they feel like we're making the changes to accommodate millennials. Recruiting, incentive programs, onboarding, compensation, training, and coaching have been in status quo mode and reflect primarily Gen Xers and baby boomers' needs. We've got to constantly thinking about how we adapt and change to prepare for a new workforce. In addition to that survey, we asked all food workers, and this is not just millennials, but specific to the entire industry, if they use social media. A resounding 92% said they use social media. Online reputation engagement is critical to recruiting and retaining talent within our industry. When further asked, by the way, what types of social media they use, the top two responses were Facebook and YouTube. And overwhelmingly, a majority of candidates do online research on companies prior to joining the company. This goes back to the point that I made before around online reputation being critical and making sure that you've got a strategy on how you deal with that, especially as it relates to customers and prospective employees. We talked about in one of the first slides, what are some of the commonalities in the workforce? And one of the questions, or one of the points that I made was that all of our generations want learning opportunities. When surveyed on the food worker survey, I want to have an opportunity to be promoted or move up within the company. 75.9% of employees indicated that they wanted that opportunity. We need to leverage skill gaps. Leverage employees to address growing skill gaps and also fill much needed leadership positions. This tends to be one of the most difficult things that we do today and one of our biggest gaps within the workforce. So with that being said, I've given you a little bit of insight into our workforce today, the impact of millennials, and some of the things that we've learned. I'm going to turn it over to Spencer to talk a little bit more about what he's learned over the course of his career and some of the things that he's used to attract, retain, and develop workforces. Spencer, I'll turn it over to you.
Excellent. Well, I first of all want to say that if there is over 100 people on this and 30% of them are millennials, no one has used the hashtag other than myself and Alchemy yet on the Twitter feed. So here is just a quick thing. Every one of you who are out there listening, all it takes is if you have a smartphone or you have a Twitter application on your phone or you have Twitter on a website, all you do is put the hashtag and tweet out something, and the first person who does gets a $5 Starbucks gift card that I'm going to send out. So I'll be watching for that and we'll get that done. But first off, I want to talk about what we do when it comes to attracting people. So as we look at attracting people, we've got several different things that we want to see. The very first thing is that, if we can forward the slide on, I don't know that we have got that yet. There we go. So as we're going to attract people to our business, we got to look at who we're competing against and what's going on out there. And you just saw the slide that he just shared that showed, Wes said that 75.9% of people want to move up. Well, so my question to you is, if people do that, they want to grow. So in our next slide, you're going to see that you have this group of people, and I don't know what the other, 24%, why they don't want to move up. They may be just happy with what they're doing. But the first thing is that we want to grow people. So as we're attracting people, we need to look at what is the thing that we want to grow. Like, what? Think about this. Here's what I'd love you to do right now. Those of you especially who are using this, I've seen a bunch of people now that have commented and put the hashtag out there for the Alchemy webinar. Everyone that can, I want you to think about this, and if you're not going to answer it on Twitter, answer it in your head, but that question is, why did you leave your last employer? So was it because you didn't get a chance to grow? Was it, what are those things that you left for? So people want to outgrow their last job. So let them grow into this new job, whatever that is that you're looking for them to attract them to you. So sell the idea of growth when it comes to attracting and when you're out there recruiting for people. Because what you must deliver on is the ability to grow in order to really attract people to your business. So I really want, you know, to be real clear on that, that if you are going to attract people, you've got to have opportunities for growth. Next up, I really want to talk about having the right people in the right roles. So we want to be clear about what their day-to-day activities are going to be so we can find the right person up front. And on the slide here, it says, don't squish to fit. I think we've all been in organizations or seen people in organizations that because they are maybe well-liked, maybe they've got great skills, but it's not specific to that job that they're doing, that they need to be moving on to something else. So you have these skills, but they're not the right skills for that role. And so what we do is we kind of squish them into another role and say, well, I think you'll do good at this. And the reality is we want the right person to be in the role that they're in, doing the right thing with the skills that they have. So as you think about having the right people in the right role, what that does is it lights their fire. You know, if they're not doing the work that lights their fire, then they're going to be short term, or they're going to department hop. And so they're going to, you know, they're going to look for other opportunities. Now, even in our own organization that I just left, the Genesis Brand Solutions, we had great people who were there. And yet even people in senior roles in management in different places, they will still look. We had a lot of the millennial types. And so when you have the millennials, they're going to be looking. They are tech savvy. They're going to be online. They're going to be looking on Indeed and looking on Monster, and they're going to be out there looking at it. And we'll talk even more about that in a couple of other topics here. But you really have got to, you know, have opportunities for growth to really attract people and to retain people as well. So right people, right roles, make sure that they're doing the things that need to happen. Next up is we've got to look at benefits. So when it comes to the HR world, when it comes to, you know, what we do inside of our company, I don't believe that this is just an HR role. This has to be a company-wide thing. We've really got to get clear on, you know, what are the benefits we're going to do and getting out of the box. Because, you know, everybody offers regular benefits, everyday benefits, you know. So what are you doing to be different? Do you provide or do you reimburse for childcare? That's a differentiator. Do you have an in-house gym or pay for their $20 membership fee or reimburse for a gym membership? That might be some other type of competitive benefit. How about offering, you know, family travel once a year around a business trip? So if you have your employee that's going to go to a trade show or go to a specific place to travel for company business, what kind of benefit would it be if you were to add on another plane ticket or, you know, another, even family travel? I mean, that's to some people, if you ask them what's like huge driver for them, one of those things could be travel. So, you know, you do want to personalize this to some degree to different people in the organization, but having the ability to do things where they don't get that in any place else, that's a big deal. So when people, those differentiators, you know, one of the things that we did is that we offered what we called recognition days. Now, a recognition day was recognizing that you have been around the organization for as long as you have. So when you get your one-year mark, I mean, we had our regular 2 weeks of vacation that we offer to all employees, but when you hit 1 year, we pushed and got approved by the organization to be able to say, we're going to give a day of recognition, a day off for every year of service that you are at the company. So what that meant is after year one, you got a day that you could take any day, any time that you wanted to, as long as it obviously worked with your schedule and worked with your manager, they had to approve that. But then on year two, you got 2 days. In year three, you got 3 days. And this is in addition to your 2 weeks of vacation. Well, I can tell you this. We put it in place for a retention thing, but it really also can attract people into your business, because when it came to retaining, we have some people that have been in our business for 10 and 12 years that, if you think about 2 weeks vacation and then add on another 2.5 to 3 weeks of time off, they are never going to leave because they've got such a great deal with their benefit that they don't want to go anywhere else. So what are those things that you can do inside of your own organization that really don't cost? That was one that I had to really work over the CEO But when I went to the CFO at the company and really showed him what I was thinking on this conversation about doing recognition days, he said, this is a no cost to us as long as somebody else can cover their job roles for those times that they're gone. So that's one of the things to look at, is what are the ones that really don't cost much? It's a lot easier to get through those, you know, the higher levels of the organization, the C-suite of management. So competitive benefits is certainly a way to attract people. Obviously, another way to attract people is through compensation. So when it comes to compensation, I believe that so many of us in the food manufacturing space, we pay attention to the bottom end of the scale when it comes to working in the plant. So in other words, when we pay, we're paying at the lower side of the scale. Now, that may not be true for all organizations and all people. I'm just saying, as a generalization, that's what I've seen when it comes to a lot of food manufacturing, when you compare it to all other manufacturing or other equal type jobs out there. So, you know, how much, and this is a conversation to have possibly with HR as well as with, you know, the management of the organization, but how much would it really cost to be in the top 10% of your local market? And find that out. You know, do a marketplace analysis. Model out the numbers, or have your finance geniuses work it out, and then really attract people with money, because people always look for money as a starting point. It may not be what they're going to, you know, it may not be the end-all be-all, but that's when you were looking for your last job, that's kind of where it started at. Then all the other things were really to give you that edge over the other person that you were looking at. So when you're looking at bringing people on and looking at how you're going to bring them on, that way of having the compensation conversation, make sure you're in the top of that. If you can. Now, it may not make a big difference. You know, I said run the numbers, model it out. You might look at that and go, oh, well, you know, it costs too much. Well, that's fine, but look at other options that you can do to make that happen. So, you know, another thing is, as Wes just asked the question about, how about volunteer time off? And that may be a really great idea to be able to use for the millennials especially. They want to have time flex. They want to have the opportunity to do what they want to do, or be able to travel or go do something and still get work done at times when they want to have, you know, that flexibility inside of their time. Okay, so next we're going to talk about retaining people. Now, I think everyone knows how much it costs to attract new people. And if you don't, you really ought to get some data behind that, because if you are going to talk to senior management about the idea of changing benefits or bringing on extra benefits, one of the things that you're going to want to talk about is retention and how much it costs to attract new people. So honestly, I believe that retention should be your number one priority in your business, is making sure that you retain the good people that you have. And then if there's not good people, that you learn how to develop those people and work them out. But make sure that you really look at how much it costs to attract new people, because that's going to change this whole conversation around retention. Because if you look at what the cost of the value of an employee, so the cost to value, there was a great article that was written on LinkedIn that I read. And if you want the link to it, I could throw it out there. But it was done by Deloitte, Burson by Deloitte. So Josh Burson is the founder of Burson by Deloitte, and he published an article. And in this article, he had this graphic. And I want to make sure that each of you can see this graphic. So if you're not looking at your screen right now, this is a good time to come back and check out your screen. So I know I do webinars as well. I've been on the time where I've got somebody, I'm something else I'm doing. So here's the time to bring it back and look at this. And that is, this question is, the economic value to the organization is that left access. So this is when it costs a lot more, and then when it gets more value to the organization is going up there. The other axis is on time. So when we hire someone, that new hire that we have, that's a super costly thing, right? Because that person does not know how to do our processes. They do not work inside of our systems. They are not the ideal person that knows everything about our business. So when we have a new hire, they are very low value at the very beginning as far as value to the organization. So then once we onboard them, they become more valuable. And that onboarding, it could be a very simple process, but for most of us, we are regulated by a lot of different regulatory agencies, and so we've got a lot of onboarding that we have to do over that first maybe 90 days You know, I know that one of the people on this webinar right now, I just got a text from a minute ago, is the guy who's over all the training and the safety and all that stuff at the Genesis Brand Solutions where I've been before. And if you asked him how many hours of minimum training someone needs to have, it's a big number, and I think all of us can relate to that because we have GMPs, we have sexual harassment, we have safety and OSHA procedures that we need to go through. So onboarding is going to be, once again, very expensive to bring them on. And then over time, they're going to get more and more training. Well, now they're valuable because they know how to use our systems, they know how to use our processes. And once we get them to the point where they have got this assignment that they know what they're doing, now we normally want to have an opportunity to give them more, right? We want to, they've got what they've got, and now we give them more. And that's one of the things that we've got to look at in the HR world is looking at, okay, once we have somebody onboarded, that's when we need to start giving them some more of the responsibilities. Because if we just dump it all on them at one time at the very beginning and we don't have anybody else to cover for that, that's going to be a very difficult job. So we want some people to be able to feel good at their job and not be drowned with their first few days. And I think most of us have experienced being drowned in our first 90 days or even first week. We all feel like fire hose. But once we have that point where we can actually give them some new assignments, that's when employee engagement starts to really have great impact on things. So this is when you start getting in the return zone of that employee. So if we have fast turnover, then, man, that costs us a lot of money. So we want to look at this and just be able to go, okay, how are we going to retain people? Because all this up to this point, right, all this training, all this onboarding is super expensive when it comes to time away from what they should be doing, that they need to learn how to do all the things that need to happen, because we have to have those basic minimum trainings happening. So anyway, the cost of value of an employee is really important to look at. If any of you have questions on that, I'd be happy to throw off the link on it to give you some insight on this. But here's one of the things I want you to think about in your past career. And we're going to put up a poll here in just a minute. And look at this quote. People don't leave companies. They leave managers. You know, if you think back in your career, did you ever leave a position because the position you couldn't stand, but you loved your manager? I'll bet it took a lot of other things before you actually left. But now think about this. Have you ever worked someplace where you couldn't stand your manager, but you loved your position? Well, I'll bet you left a lot sooner. As soon as you found something else, you probably left, because that is one of those things that is just really, really difficult. So, you know, Jordan, I see that your comment on here that retention is number one priority. It really is, and really having developed managers that do a great job is super important. And I will throw you that link out on here, so watch for that as soon as I get done talking here. But I really want you to think about this. So as we're going to do this poll now, everybody look at your screen, because we're going to pop up this poll, and it's going to ask the question. And the question is very simply, have you left a job you loved because of a manager? I really want to know that answer. How many of us have left a job you loved because of a manager that you didn't necessarily love? Because this will give you an insight. The people I've asked, I've seen some pretty amazing responses from. I'd like to know what you have, what your thoughts are. Have you left a job you loved because of a manager that maybe you didn't love? Look at that, 70%. So a lot of people, like I said in the last slide, was that you'll leave because of a manager. You don't leave the company, you leave the manager. So we really, really need to have this conversation about developing managers, because this is what retention, this is where it comes from. So let's go over to this next slide here and see what we've got. Developing your managers. We're going to talk even more about this here in a little bit, but I just wanted you to think about the ROI that you have on management training. I can tell you, as a management professional and a training professional, it's very, very difficult to measure the ROI on management training. But I can also tell you, without question, it will sink you faster than anything else if you don't have good management training going on now. whether you have your own department inside that can train that, whether you bring in an outside consultant, whether you send them out for management training at a local training company in your area, the absolute killer thing to have is great managers. And so I hope that everyone can see that. It's hard to manage. It's hard to understand at a senior executive level how they can spend a lot of money in developing managers, but yet that is why 70% of the people on this call right now, 70% left a job because of their boss. So this is one of those things that, you know, really take back as a note inside of what you're going to do and what you're going to do moving forward. But know that it will sink you faster than anything else if you do not develop your managers. So next thing I want to talk about is recognition. Now, I said in one of the programs that we developed was recognition of a day that you got off for a year of service. Now, that's a great thing, but I'm talking about recognition that happens regularly. So this is something that when you're coaching employees, when you're talking to employees, when you're working with your employees, that you're giving them feedback. You know, it's important to correct when employees are doing something wrong, but we should also remember to recognize what they're doing well. So one of the great tools that we use, talk to your person about that at Alchemy. I would highly recommend looking into it. It is a very inexpensive way of truly reinforcing people. We would be able to take pictures and put right there on our tablets as we would walk through the facility and be able to see, yes, are you trained at what you know how to do? Are you clear on the steps and the procedures? And here's something that you did that was really great. And here's something that you may need to work on. And you're able to take pictures and show them that. Anyway, it's a phenomenal way. But one of the things that I think all of us really understand is the fact that we don't get enough recognition. It doesn't matter how much recognition you get, you still want more. it's an interesting thing. I put together about 5 or 6 different programs over the last few years at the organization, and what we did was all kinds of different recognition. So one of those recognition items we did was a big wheel out on the wall, and there was 24 different places on the wall. You could go spin the wheel, and then you have a form that you could fill in with any different gifts that you could do, and you could do it departmentally. So each department head, I gave a form that said, here you go, fill in the 24 different things, whether that's a gift card to Starbucks or whether that's a Walmart gift card or different things that were bonuses or candy bar or different things like that, just so they had something. Now, what I used it for was when you have someone who broke a record or somebody who did something phenomenal. So being able to positively reinforce when somebody does something, that's where you go, okay, now we get to go out and you get to spin the wheel and you get to have some recognition. So it was a pretty cool system. You really got to look at, when it comes to recognition, what are you doing? You know, we did little note cards that every single manager had several of these different postcards and note cards in their pocket. And it was recognizing something that they had done that was above the line, we called it. Above the line meant they did something that really got results and that was a positive thing for the company. And an interesting thing happened. I was out in the plant one time talking to the director of quality, and the director of quality sat right out on the floor right in our packaging area. And one of the things that he told me is, I said, how many of those have given out? He says, oh, I've given out a handful of them. I said, so why have you not given out more? He said, well, you know, I don't want to give them out so much that then people don't value it. I said, oh, okay, well, let me ask you this, Patrick. Here's a question for you. If I came up to you today and I told you, hey, Patrick, I saw the way that you were interacting with your employee out there. You really showed a lot of care to them. That's a great thing for our business. Thank you. That's an exemplary skill. Thank you. And then tomorrow I came in and I say, Patrick, you know, I saw when you came into work today, you held the door open for some of the people as you were doing it. That was just a real gentleman thing to do. Thank you for doing that. And then I say, you know, the next day I come in and I say, Patrick, I saw the report you prepared for the executive team, and I really want to tell you, that was a lot of work you put into that, and thank you, because it was really insightful to show the executive team what we were dealing with in the packaging quality. And I said, would you get tired if I came in every day and told you those great things about what you did? And he chuckled and he said, well, no, of course I wouldn't get tired of that. I said, nobody gets tired of recognition. So as long as it's heartfelt and it actually means, and it's true and it's honest, that is such an absolute thing to focus on and to do daily. I said, Patrick, I'd love to see you wallpaper this entire plant with those cards, because that means everybody in the plant is feeling better because you're recognizing them. And you're a very high level manager in this organization. So make sure that it starts with management and it comes all the way down to your baseline managers. So being able to have that positive reinforcement, it goes a long way in retaining talent. Next, I'm going to talk about communication. You know, how your employees think and what drives their motivation. And we're going to move through this a little bit faster. But do you know what they really think or how they think? I think assessments and profiles are priceless when you're developing and coaching employees, finding out their true motivators. You know what? And here's the interesting thing. We all have extrinsic motivators and intrinsic motivators. And the extrinsic motivators are the money, the days off, the gifts, that kind of stuff. But the intrinsic motivators are super important. You know, do they want to be inspired? So inspire me, or include me, or empower me, or direct me, or motivate me. Those are the things that really get people to do a great job every day, not just on payday. So communication is absolutely key. Next, we talked a little bit about compensation before. And if you saw the marketplace analysis, what we want to do, another part of that that goes right along with communication is I think we need to be having employee conversations about this. Now, some organizations are really, you know, they have a stigma, or they have a fear or tiptoe around the idea of talking about compensation. But the reality is, when was the last time you had an open conversation with your employee about what they think they should be paid based on the value that they build in your organization? My guess is most of us on this call haven't had that conversation with our supervisor. And my guess is that also the people in the organization that we want to retain have not had that conversation as well. So, you know, this is where you got to have some data. You got to have their, you know, what is their marketplace analysis, so that you can then take that and then be able to say, okay, how do you want to increase your value? How do you want to do this so you can be worth more to the organization so they'll pay you more? Because in this world of supply and demand, we pay based on value. So are you creating enough value to substantiate making more money? And the reality is we don't have that conversation. So having those conversations, giving people that roadmap that they're wanting to see, where can I go and how do I want to do this, is a big deal. Okay, next we want to go into relationships. Do they have friends at work? Do they feel part of a group? Because if you don't have those friends at work, you're probably not going to be as engaged there. The more people that you have that you like and know and trust that are in your environment, the more fun you have, the more engaged you are in what you're doing, the more you want to be there. And if you don't have those people, then it's really hard. You know, when it comes to the sales world, Jeffrey Gittimer is one of my favorite authors. And what he says is, all things being equal, people will do business with their friends. All things not being equal, people will still do business with their friends. So what that means is people will do business with their friends. And if they don't have friends inside the workforce or inside their own area, department, people inside the organization, then it really is one of those where it's going to be hard to retain people, because if you have a group of social friends that you like at work, it's very hard to leave those people, because now you have to sever all those ties that you don't get to see those people on a regular basis, and it's hard to separate yourself from that. So that was one more thing that builds them into retention and having them be there. Okay, so the last section we're going to talk about is just developing people. And when it comes to developing people, we really have to look at what opportunities we're giving them. So, you know, what does their career path look like with you in the organization? Now, it may be that it's kind of a dead-end spot. And if that's true, then we may not want to have that conversation with that employee specifically. But if we really want to develop people so that we retain them and they stay on longer and they become more valuable to our organizations, we've got to have a future state for that employee. We've got to look at that and say, what, you know, succession planning possibly for management, but also, can you become a supervisor? Can you become a manager? How does that look for you? You know, people will work for a goal if they can see it out there. If they can't see it, they don't know what they're looking for. They're just grinding through and they're just getting through the day. And so I want you to just look at this picture, this image that I just put up on the slide. As you look at this path, this is really, in my opinion, having somewhat of a look forward to be able to say, what's ahead of me? Can I become a supervisor if I'm a baseline employee? That's just down the path. Can they do all the things that they need to do in order to get there? That's an important part. But if we really want to get them involved, then we really need to look at having a map and seeing further than just the trail that I'm on right now. Where is this really leading me? And so this is future planning instead of just planning right ahead of you. This is, you know, it's this trail map of the Machu Picchu going on the Inca Trail. It's a very, very long journey. You got 36 miles about to travel up through high elevation. And if you can show somebody, okay, here's what we're going to do and here's what it takes. And this peak right here is really hard. This is at almost 14,000 feet. And we're going to have to be slower in this to get there, but it's going to take that constant effort to get there. And then you're going to be walking down, and this is a harder. So if we can give someone, here's the plan and here's the career path that we really have as an opportunity for you, people will really be more engaged and stay in for the long term. So as we look at this, recognition, we already touched on enough. I think that, you know, have you been recognized too much? I think it's impossible to overdo it. So really, that's one of the things that just keep moving on that. Recognize more than you do anything else, and it will help build the people that you work with. And then invest in management and leadership training. So if every single employee deserves to be trained and to give a glimpse of what it's like to be a leader. So you need to show them that vision. Give them hope for the future, what leads them, you know. Even if it's only for themselves to lead, if they can't even lead a group of people, show them how they can lead themselves to be a better person, a better employee for the organization. And I think this is probably the single biggest struggle when it comes to plant ownership or the executive senior management, and is to be able to, that struggle between how much to spend and invest, because you can't tie immediate results to those returns. But it does make or break your corporate culture. So with that, you know, the culture is truly, you know, strategy is important, but culture will absolutely eat it for breakfast. And there's a guy named Ivan Meisner. He owns a networking organization company. And in the networking organization, he said, culture eats strategy for breakfast. So most of our executive company, most of our executives in our companies, they really look at their strategic plan. What are they doing? How are they going to drive this mission, vision, goals? But they discount the true culture that's underlying that, that makes everything happen. And it's not easy. Culture change is a very difficult process, but it's absolutely worth it. And it comes with investing in our people. So with that, Wes, I think you have the next slide up here.
Thanks, Spencer. I appreciate it. You know, the one thing, by the way, that resonated with me when you were talking about compensation is this is one, especially for HR professionals on the line today, where if you don't control the conversation, then your employees will control it for you. And I think often, and I do this all the time as an employee, I think of compensation as just what I'm paid. I don't necessarily equate it to benefits. I don't think about flexibility in the workplace. I don't think about my time off, and all of those coming together to create a much bigger conversation than just what that's worth on a biweekly basis or a bi-monthly basis. So really interesting though, Spencer, and I appreciate you you covering that information. Before we go into Q&A, I just want to remind everybody that Alchemy does have expertise in products related to a lot of things that we talked about today. Specifically, we can help you with learning and development, employee communications, and performance management. So if you want more information about any of that, you can go online to www.alchemysystems.com. But with that being said, I think we're going to turn it over to Chase to kick us off with our Q&A.
Well, again, thank you to Spencer and Wes for all of that wonderful information. We have quite a few questions that have come in, so we will jump into the top of the list. Spencer, we will direct this one your way. How do we get upper-level buy-in for implementing new competitive benefits?
I think part of it has to be done with data. The other part of it has to be done with the touchy-feely side of things. So you've got to show that people are people And we also have to show that money is money. And we understand that if we spend this money, we're going to get the result. Now, that sounds simple and basic, but the reality is we really have to go and what I did is I went out and I polled a lot of the people on the floor and asked questions. What would be a benefit for you? What would be the value? And then went back to senior management and be able to say, look, this is what we're talking about. I'd like to just put some things out there and see which ones you guys want to invest in. And that's how I started the process. And, you know, the interesting thing was is it was a lot easier to get their buy-in than I thought it was going to be because they went, you know what, that's not a very expensive benefit. I would say that having your data, but also having some real world people's comments and people's feedback is another important part to get buy-in.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for that. Our next question we're going to direct to Wes. In your presentation, you talked about the role that social media plays, but how can you utilize social media in a plant environment? Largest concern is I don't want employees checking their personal social media during work, but I see value in leveraging it as a tool.
Yeah, great question. So first of all, I'll be the first to admit social media makes me nervous all the time, especially in the workforce. I think the first answer to the question here is safety is always first, right? And we've got to make sure that our employees understand that. The primary focus of the day is to start the work safe and finish work safe, so we've got to have rules in place around that. But also understand that productivity is probably the biggest thing that we think about each and every day. And it's not about how do we avoid using social media to drive, not about how we avoid using social media, it's how do we use social media to drive productivity. We have a few clients actually who use social media within their work sites. And the best way I've seen this used is as a knowledge repository and sort of an ask us, tell us sort of fashion. Social media can also be used to engage your workforce through recognition, I think is a really good point. During my time at Target, we used Twitter quite often on public praise, especially when we saw a really great store, really great process. Or if we were able to interact with employees who gave great service to our guests. It was one of the things that they really enjoyed was having their boss or their boss's boss or their boss's boss's boss take a photo with them and throw it up onto Twitter. So I think it's one of the tools that you got to figure out that what works best for your environment, keeping in mind that safety and productivity are always going to be top of mind, but it's definitely possible to be able to incorporate that in a way that best suits you.
Terrific. The next one I'm going to open up to both of y'all, and you guys can fight over who gets to give the better answer. But from an HR perspective, how can I deal with employees who do not have a good relationship with their manager? What if employees don't tell me? How can I monitor that? How can we be proactive in that space?
Go
ahead, Spencer.
Communication. Once again, we talked a lot about the communication piece, and that is an important part for all organizations to be able to have that open policy. So, I mean, you go ahead, and I'll try and back in.
Yeah, I think you know, it's funny that you say that. A lot of people use that term open door policy, and I think it's open door culture, right? You as an HR professional, as a leader in your organization, know where there are trouble spots or trouble issues. And I think what we have to do is proactively ask about those trouble issues and expect to get some tough responses. What we do with that then builds credibility with our team. And in any case, hopefully as an HR professional or as a leader, you're able to address that very quickly in a way that continues to build upon that credibility for yourself and for your organization. I've in my career had quite a few times where I've got leaders in place that had troubled relationships with their team, but fortunately, because of my way of communicating with them, my way of interacting with them, asking those tough questions, allowed me to mitigate a lot of problems. And this is very, very common. If you don't have this in your workforce, I'd be very surprised. I think along the way, we always run into these sort of trouble spots.
Thank you for that. Got another great question. Spencer, we'll point this one your way. Can you talk a little bit about how to implement an employee development process? What does it take up front, and what results do you see? I'm interested in how that works in a plant setting specifically. Goes on for a little bit more, just around career paths in general and how rigid, how flexible, your thoughts on that.
Sure. The first thing that we did, if you look at it as a, in a lean perspective, we looked at who added value. So we, you know, in Genesis Brand Solutions, powder manufacturing is what we do private label. So we look at specific points in which value was added, and one of the most important value add spots was the actual machine operators who were putting the powder in the bottle with the automated machines that did that, and their workers that worked with them. So from our CEO level, that was very simple. That person right there, that manager, that we had them called a team leader, they led the team on the manufacturing floor. That team leader was, very simply put, our number one most important person in the building, over the CEO, over everyone else, because if they don't do their job, then we don't get the powder out, none of us make money enough, none of us have anything to do benefits or anything else. So they make us the money. And there's a few other places where we did blending and where we did a few places where people actually handled the product. But that one was where we started, and we said, okay, what we need to do is create a plan, a path, a career path for that one specific person. So we started with the number, you know, with the number one most important, and then we built that out and said, okay, what would it look like if this person was perfectly trained and knew how to run every machine so that they could be interchanged on different lines with different packaging materials and bottles and packets and stick packs and, you know, all the different things that we did. So we said, we're going to have a training program that says this is how long it takes to get everything, every machine, all the soft skills that we want you to learn as far as leadership goes, all the safety, everything. Then we broke it into chunks and we said, okay, this is going to take 6 months to do this. This is going to take another 3 months to do this. This is going to take another 3 months to do. And we put them in a plan and then made levels so that we had a career path that said this is level one. Actually, we started with a team lead in training, and then they were team lead level 3, level 2, and level 1. And we gave colored badges around that so that on their lanyards we knew who they were and which level they were, so we could identify very quickly who'd been trained up to a specific level. And it created quite a buzz on the whole production floor because now people saw, oh, this person is more trained than the others, and they've attended more things, and then other people wanted to attend those trainings as well. So we gave them a path, and in that path we very clearly spelled out as well what that meant as far as compensation. So we went from this, and there was a dollar higher for this one, and a 50 cent higher for this one, another 50 cent higher, so they could see that path, know how much money, and then that drove them to do it as well. Once we had it done with one group of people, we took that and did the same cookie cutter across every single plant operation. So it did take for the first one about 6 months to build it all out. But once we did the first one, we did about 15 more in the next 6 months. So it took us about a year to get it going, and then we had, you know, weekly trainings and a process that went. We ended up videoing all those trainings and having a full video library that people could go in, and then we started using Alchemy to serve all that out, where we did it live at first, then we did recorded trainings, and then we have backup trainings for those who are new that need to learn all those things. So Alchemy became an absolutely indispensable tool for us to be able to do that and use the process to build through that in a learning plan. So each one of those steps was a learning plan, and then we built on that process. So if we didn't have Alchemy, I don't think we could have done it the way that we needed to do it, because that way we could keep track of everything, and it didn't take one person managing all that, and it was a really, that would be a very intensive job. Did that answer it clearly?
I think so. I think we're going to try to squeeze one more question in really quickly. This one will drive to Wes. In your experience, what has been the most competitive benefit as from a employee feedback standpoint? So most successful, received the most positive feedback in your experience.
Yeah, this is actually an interesting one, because the traditional benefit outside of cash compensation is medical, right? And in the past, I would say before ACA, medical was pretty much standardized across most employers. You didn't see a lot of variation. Due to the impact of affordable health care, there's a lot of variations and a lot of deviations depending on the employer. And I think it's also interesting with the timing that as an American society, we've become a lot more health conscious about who we are. And so this provides you a lot of opportunity to really create a very competitive benefit for your team. You know, for us at Alchemy, it's probably one of the number one things that attracts people and keeps them here, because our focus on well-being in general. I caveat that with flexibility in the workforce, I think, is also something else that people really desire, especially today. It seems our lives are very different than they were even 5 to 10 years ago, and how connected we are with the world. I think some of the fun ones, by the way, I mentioned volunteer time off earlier. That's a big one, especially for millennials. I will tell you, it sounds silly, but recognition that's food-based has always gone over really well. I think we started our call today before everybody jumped on talking about Bagel Wednesday and Taco Thursday. And then, you know, for some of the larger food processing plants out there, one of the things that's been a big driver in recent years that's driven down healthcare costs for organizations and also increased overall employee satisfaction are on-site health care opportunities. So lots of things out there. I think just doing a quick Google at some of the top companies will give you an idea of some of the fun things that you can do. But I'll tell you, you know, just going back to the basics, there's a lot of value in doing that, especially in today's environment.
Well, thank you so much for that. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that puts us right about our time. Again, thank you for everyone who took the time to join us for our webinar this afternoon, and a special thanks to our presenters, Spencer and Wes, for taking time out of their day to share perspective on this very poignant topic. Again, a quick reminder that the assets featured in today's webinar, a recording of the session and the slide deck, will be sent out to everyone who registered and participated in today's event. That will go out in about 24 to 48 hours. In addition, we have two webinars that will be coming up later this month that we encourage you guys to participate in. One is top 10 OSHA violations and how to avoid those. And then the other will be an e-seminar and provide some insight on how you convert your food safety plans to meet the new HARPC standards. So those will be coming up later this month. Again, the last little call to action is there will be a survey that pops up as you guys exit today's webinar. We would very much encourage you to take a few minutes to fill that out and provide your feedback. It will also give you an opportunity, if you'd like to hear more about Alchemy products and solutions, you can notify us in that form as well. So again, thank you to everyone for participating, and enjoy the rest of your afternoon.